Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman. And this afternoon, just this afternoon, because you're in California, we have Tim Oppelt with SWM Law Firm. Nice to have you, Tim.
Great to be here.
Excellent. And it is just turning the hour, so I guess it's afternoon there now, right?
Yep.
So you're still drinking coffee, latte with a lawyer. That's our standard question to get started. What's your...
You know, my coffee's all done for the morning. You know, when I feel like I affording the calories, yes, it's a latte, but... Yeah, you usually just the cheap stuff that I make at home.
Excellent. Good. The cheap stuff. I'm with you on that. Just brew it and three cups of coffee and I'm good. Uh-huh. All right. Good deal. So, all right. So tell us about the type of law that you practice.
So our firm, we're kind of niche. We're all transactional.
Okay.
And we represent credit unions. So credit unions, for the uninitiated, are member-owned financial institutions. So yep. All of the customers of the financial institution are its owners. So it's kind of a weird combination of a nonprofit or not-for-profit and pure capitalism.
Yeah.
So I sometimes joke that I've got kind of that best of both worlds of socialism and capitalism as what we do, which is it's interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. So when you say transactional, like what are the transactions you would do with a credit union?
So firm-wide, it's kind of everything law-related that a financial institution could need other than going to court. So everything from employment agreements, advice on how to, you know, deal with specific employee situations. We've also got contracts, you know, in terms of negotiation and things like that, real estate deals, leases. We also do compliance work. You know, we write all of the fine print that comes with your credit card.
Okay.
Things like that. I personally, in some ways, a lot of times I'm kind of like a psychologist for CEOs. I kind of help people make good choices, which it's an interesting way. You know, you've got lawyers that old, you know, calling each other counselor.
Yeah.
Really, I'm a counselor.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I help
for sure.
Banks make good choices.
Yeah, I understand. Interesting. And is it just regional? Do you do it across the country?
About 70% of our practice is in California.
Okay.
But the other 30% is all around the country. I mean, there are only 5,000 credit unions in the United States. And, you know, we touch about 20% of the assets of credit unions nationwide. And about 20% of the credit unions over $1 billion in assets. So,
okay.
It's, you know, a lot of credit unions out there can't afford us because, you know, they're teeny tiny, run out of somebody's garage. But of those who do, you know, we're the biggest thing like us in the country.
Like who, give me some of the big ones you would work with. Like, are these like teachers, credit unions and things like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are teachers, credit unions, firefighter credit unions, you know, airline credit unions,
okay, yeah.
You know, regional, you know, community-based credit unions. Yeah, all of that.
Interesting. So how do people, I'm actually curious, this has nothing to do with being a lawyer, but I'm curious to know how the makeup of the consumer at a credit union as opposed to a bank or...
You know, really, it's the same consumer base, you know, at most financial institute, most credit unions, anybody who, anybody who wants credit union services is going to be able to find a credit union, at least one credit union. And there are plenty of credit unions out there that have membership criteria that are flexible enough that, you know, you can just walk in and join. So, yeah, it's kind of the same people that go to Bank of America, except they, you know, they feel like not going to Bank of America.
I guess. Okay. They want more, maybe more of a personal touch or something. I don't know what the other benefits are. Okay. So how long have you been doing this kind of work?
This was my second year job in law school. You know, I've been with the firm for 16 years. So this is it.
And that's your life. This is
fell into this. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. What did you do before you joined this firm? Any other type of law?
No, I mean, before law school, I worked briefly or for a year as a legal secretary at a small subrogation firm in Georgia. So I was pretty much suing poor people who got in car wrecks with no insurance. I decided I didn't want to do that, but I was still interested in being a lawyer.
Okay. And you're happy with this, staying in this kind of law. How many lawyers are in the firm? Is it a big law firm?
We're 15 lawyers.
15,
so,
okay.
Yeah, very, very small, but still, again, we're the biggest thing like us.
Yeah, in a niche industry.
Yeah. Boutique practices, as you know, tend to be a lot smaller.
Sure.
I love my job. I like the people I work with. Unlike many of my friends, I can't actually say that any client has asked me to do anything or take a position that I didn't agree with.
Mm.
It's really nice being in an environment where the clients actually are genuinely trying to do the right thing. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, good. Excellent. And is this the practice of the whole firm, or does the firm do other things too?
It's all transactional for financial institutions. Yeah.
All right. Any litigation that happens from time to time or no?
No, I mean, sometimes when somebody's like, hey, can you go do this thing for me? We'll agree to. But I mean, that's the economics of a litigation firm and the staffing are completely different.
Okay.
You know, we don't have any legal secretaries who know about, you know, filing formatting. And, you know, if you asked one of our secretaries to calendar out a litigation schedule, they'd be like, what?
Got it. So, okay.
Yeah. Just not set up for it.
Interesting. Okay, good. And you're good. You're happy to stay with this for as long as, you know, you want.
Yeah. I mean, our senior partner, this was his summer job in, I think, 84.
Yeah.
We tend to stick around.
Oh, good. Excellent. Good. Where are you in the LA area?
Yeah, we're in Glendale, so just north of Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah. That's a nice place to be. Okay, very good. Why did you become a lawyer? I mean, how did you make that decision?
The joke answer is that the big philosophy firms weren't hiring.
Oh.
I was a philosophy major in college. I looked at it and I did say, hey, you know, what can you do with a philosophy degree? You can smoke a lot of pot. You can teach philosophy. You can
professor.
Do a combination of those first two, or you can go to law school. Right. But I kind of had a half-baked plan to go and be the business and legal side of things for a whole bunch of my artist friends.
Mm.
They didn't actually end up needing that. Either because they weren't that successful or, you know, the guy doing sound for a bunch of bands doesn't actually need a lawyer, right? You know?
Yeah.
So it's something where I went off and this was my plan to kind of, hey, I'm going to go get some transactional experience, so I'm ready when they hit it big. And, you know, been here ever since.
Nice. Where'd you go to school for philosophy?
Emory in Atlanta.
Oh, you went to Emory. Okay. And that's a more of a life sciences kind of place, isn't it, Emory?
Overall liberal arts. I mean, they're known for the CDC being there on campus and things like that. Sure, but yeah, they've got everything.
Okay. Yeah. No, great school. Oh, so you went to the other side of the country for undergrad.
Yeah. With as many, I did high school in Atlanta too. Okay. And with as many friends I had in the area, I knew I was not going to study if I stayed in the South.
Oh, I see. Okay. Got it. Okay. Interesting. And where'd you go to law school? On the West Coast?
Yeah. Loyola Law School, downtown LA.
Okay. Very good. Excellent. Good stuff. And where are you from originally?
Up and down the East Coast, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, spent some time in Boston, been all over.
Oh, very good. Okay. Well, I lived in Pittsburgh and I grew up in Boston. And let's see, never in Atlanta, so I'm familiar with some of those places. So interesting. Okay, good stuff. Is there anything like, I'm just curious, I mean, I typically ask this question, I'm just curious, and maybe you can't answer it because of the nature of the work you do. I was gonna say, like, what's a real memorable, interesting case or issue that you worked on?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because a lot of what we do, the point is that nobody knows about it. Mm-hmm. It actually makes marketing very difficult for us.
Okay.
Which is interesting, but, it goes all the way from, my trial by fire in the law practice was the financial crisis. You know, I graduated from law school and passed the bar in 07.
Okay.
And so some of my first projects were the world blowing up in terms of financial institutions, right?
Did you have reserve issues at the time in those institutions?
One of my first projects was dealing with a credit union failing and the regulators coming and taking it over.
Yeah. Okay.
And things like that, and the fallout from it. But, you know, some of the fun, small ones, early on in my career, we had a client that did some exotic car lending. So this is like a $300,000 loan for somebody to buy a Lamborghini Murcielago. They did it poorly. Mm. And so about 10 of these exotic cars just went missing. and this one Lamborghini was just continued to be missing. And we had private investigators all across the country looking for this car because, you know, you've got a mortgage on wheels. And they washed the title and all of this other stuff. We had litigation going on in Montana. Finally, we find the car in Florida because it got spotted. We find it, we pick it up on a lot. Chasing this car was like a year-long saga. Finally we find it, we pick it up off a car dealership lot because we said, hey, look, even if we're wrong, it's better to have the car than to let it go again to a bona fide purchaser. Ultimately, we lost because the dealership that we took the car from was a BFP. Chasing that Lamborghini around was definitely memorable.
Oh, interesting. Well, you should have come to Florida in the first place because that's like a dime a dozen here.
I know, right?
Yeah, South Florida.
So that was fun. I also had, I do governance work. During Occupy Wall Street or after that, I had the governance in a, one person, one vote type of organization that elects directors. You know, we had an organization where three Occupy Wall Street guys got onto a board and wanted to start running it like a cooperative, like a baker's cooperative. Mm. Completely started messing with the organization. The rest of the board turns on them. just huge mess. We end up with a special meeting of the members to recall these directors. But they didn't prepare well. And they didn't give me enough time to really prepare them well. And so, you know, after preparing over a Thanksgiving weekend, we have this meeting, 150 people lined up out the door for their chance to speak. I mean, pretty much, you know, folks hanging from the rafters, you know, in Berkeley, type of thing. So that was definitely, you know, one of those memorable experiences of being a parliamentarian at that meeting.
Yeah, no, I bet. But you're not going to have the chance to do, I think, what a lot of lawyers aspire to anyway, I think, but to do like a jury trial. That's not going to be part of your...
I would never want... No. I've been in a courtroom for jury duty when I got a speeding ticket, and one time with that Lamborghini.
And that's good enough for you.
That's it.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, it takes all types of attorneys, I suppose. It's interesting, yep. Yeah, because many of the people I talk to actually, you know, like they're pining for that. Like they want to be, you know, Perry Mason. They want to be in the courtroom trying a case.
Nope, never want to do it.
Okay, good.
I don't even want to know how.
All right. Very good. Excellent. So what do you think makes you or someone that does your type of work successful? What do you have to be good at?
I mean, there are a few things. And when, you know, this is the type of question that when you're counseling young lawyers, it's hard, you know, you want to be able to talk to them about that.
Yeah.
You know, one is personal responsibility, taking ownership of your problem, your projects, your career, you know, and not passing the buck. That's important. You know, another is creativity, thinking outside the box, not getting steel trapped into this is the only way to do it.
Yep.
But it's also, I think, being comfortable with ambiguity is really important to give business advice.
Right.
Because too often you sit there and you say, oh, well, I don't know all of this stuff. Well, guess what? You have to make decisions anyway. You can't research it to death. They're not going to pay you to research it to death.
Right.
So you've got to take the ambiguity and make reasonable decisions and be willing to lay it out and discuss risk. And that element of just being comfortable with you don't know everything. Heck, when you're starting out, you don't know anything. And being comfortable with that. It's big.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, that's hard for a lot of people. And business by definition is ambiguous. I mean, there is no clear cut way to do too many variables.
Right. So being able to hold all those variables in your head and say, hey, look, I know I don't know everything, but this is a reasonable path forward.
Right.
And I think there's also a bit of humility in terms of, it's not your job as the lawyer to make the decision for them. Your job is to lay out alternative paths and talk about risk.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Those are, I mean, yeah, I get that. And particularly in your role, those are critical skills. I mean, how do people have to have those? Can you help teach those?
You can help teach them, but some people just aren't suited to it.
Yeah.
You know, some people just need certainty, and they just don't do well in that environment.
Right.
You know, other people, you know, other people are much more single focused, and they're not necessarily good at mapping out a whole path of something to be able to really advise on risk, right? Because they're, you know, let me do this thing in front of me. And, you know, that's very well suited to a law in motion practice.
Yeah.
Right. But to be able to look at a situation and say, hey, let's look at the entire arc of this to play out how it's going to go. And, well, maybe you want to do this because even though it's, you know, even though you're giving up, how much justice can you afford?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're a business attorney. I mean, so you got to use a lot of judgment, and you got to live in the world of ambiguity. I get it. So, I mean, I'm curious, like, how do you sort of filter out or filter in the people you think that will be good at that? Is that easy? Is that hard to do?
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a couple of partners who are really good at it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the one who reads people and is like, okay, you're going to develop into, you know, that I wouldn't say that's one of my strengths.
Okay.
No, it's tough to see and say, okay, who's going to, you know, who's really going to make it, who's going to be really good at this.
Okay. Got it. So what advice would you give to somebody who was thinking about just going into law in general and how to pick their path, you know, where they want to be?
I mean, going into law in general, I'd definitely make sure that they were thinking through that they're not going to be Amal Clooney. They're not going to be, you know, Scalia, or, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's like, great, you can shoot for that, but the statistical likelihood is you're going to be doing a whole bunch of scut work for a long time.
Right.
And just really getting them used to the idea that the mechanics of law and the doing of the thing is a lot of reading, writing, trying to come, and that's what it is. You know, it's research. If you don't want to sit there reading all the time, then you're in the wrong field.
Yeah. It's academic. Right? It's very academic.
Right? Yeah. And so I think that's one of the, hey, you know, make sure that you want to do this because you're about to go through a life-changing experience of law school and spend a whole bunch of money. And if you find out that you didn't want to do it all along, then, you know, that isn't going to be good for you. But in terms of, you know, somebody who's interested in figuring out where they want to go, they're like, hey, look, yeah, I'm in, I want to do this. I think looking at their personality type, looking at what they want to do, that can help. But I know a ton of introverts who do really great in a practice, you know, very successful, even though, you know, like me at the beginning of their career, they were afraid of picking up the phone,
right?
Because they didn't want to talk to people, right? So it is possible to learn those things and kind of depart from the norm. You know, look at what you're interested in, but most of all, find a place where the people are good. You know, I'd love to starve this industry of the assholes who have people work for them just because of who they are.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I think we're moving more towards that in society as the generations turn over. It's a more collaborative world, right? Less about hierarchy. So. Less about hierarchy, I think.
Yeah.
I think so. I see it. I mean, there's still some, you know, hangovers in certain parts of the world, as we know. But for the most part, I see it. I can see it changing.
I think the generation, you know, I'm an elder millennial, but, you know, the generation after, you know, with everything that, on sensitivity training and things like that they've gone through in school, hopefully they don't put up with that.
Right. Yeah. 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 No, that's good. It's good. I agree. We need to move towards that for sure. All right. Interesting. I think that's all I want to ask you. I guess I would ask you in closing, just final thoughts that you want to leave with the audience about your firm, they should know about, and the best way to connect.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're a big fish in a small pond. It's odd and unusual for us to even be on a hey, let's talk to people about lawyering type of thing, because, you know, it's not what we need to do. We don't get referrals from other lawyers and things like that. So, but I think that, you know, for the folks out there who are thinking like, hey, you know, either this is the type of thing, the type of creative problem solvers, you know, that's the type of place that I'd want to be a part of. Or, you know, people who are saying, hey, you know, I run a practice in a similar niche that doesn't compete with you. I'd love some, you know, some advice on how you run things, or, you know, compare notes. Yeah, absolutely. I'm open to those conversations.
Okay, cool.
You know, our email's up on our website, swmllp.com, and you can find us and, you know, jet me an email or find me on LinkedIn. We're around.
Good. All right. Excellent. Good. Thank you for that. So for everybody again, Tim Oppelt with SWM Law Firm in California, just in California, right?
Yep.
Okay, good. And this is sponsored by EmotionTrack, which is a legal tech platform that helps litigators primarily prepare for mediation and trials with our Insights platform. So, Tim, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
And thanks, Jonathan. You too.
Good to spend time with you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, this was great.
Thanks.